Was hoping for a more relaxed conversation, but you're right, we don't have time.
This is the Extra Hot Grape Podcast, episode 426 for the week of September 26, 2022. I am Boolean operator David T. Cole, and I'm here with gossipy trash compactor Sarah D. Bunting.
Thank you, Simone.
Overly serious bell ringer Tara Ariano.
Time to blow their minds.
And outer rim droid therapist Matt Belknap.
I don't think you can be too emo.
Welcome to Extra Hot Grape for another week. Joining us for the first time, he is a producer and co-host on the very long-running podcast Never Not Funny. It's Matt Belknap!
Welcome back!
Thrilled to have you here to talk about Andor. And for those who don't know, if you watched the feature film Rogue One in 2016 and wondered what happened in the life of Cassian Andor before he was rebelling against the Empire, wonder no more. In Disney Plus's new series, we pick back up with the titular Andor, Diego Luna, years before the events of the movie and learn about his life as an orphan in a tribe of kids on an abandoned mining planet, his current search for his sister, and his impressive gifts as a black market MacGuffin dealer. The show comes from Tony Gilroy, who, before he wrote the Rogue One screenplay, also wrote the first three Bourne movies and wrote and directed the Oscar-nominated feature, Michael Clayton. The first three episodes have dropped. That's all we've seen as we are recording this. By the time you hear us, the fourth will be up on Disney+. Let's do the Chen check-in. Matt, should our listeners watch Andor?
Yes.
All right, Sarah.
Sure.
Dave?
I will say yes, but this might be your father's Star Wars, but in this case, I am your father, so I'm going to say yes.
I'm going to say yes as well. And so we'll start here, not to dox your age, Matt. I know, though, you were right in the sweet spot when the first Star Wars movie came out for it to imprint on you. What has your experience been with the three Star Wars shows that preceded this one on Disney Plus?
Oh, it's been a roller coaster, Tara.
Yep.
I loved The Mandalorian. I felt like The Mandalorian really captured what I think Star Wars is about, which is taking different genres and mixing them together in cool ways. And it was new characters, even though it was obviously kind of just a stand-in for Boba Fett. It was still something fresh. And then they kind of went backwards for me. Like, I think Boba Fett was unnecessary. Once they made Mandalorian, I don't know why we needed a Boba Fett show, especially if it was going to be such a...
The Mordalorian.
Yeah. Such a bummer backwards move of like, here's, let's fill in some gaps nobody asked about and come up with the least creative answers to questions that really don't need to be answered. But, and then I thought Obi-Wan similarly was like had some promise, but I'm over them filling in the gaps, these little nooks and crannies. Like I at this point, I kind of want them to leave the original timeline alone and just go in new directions, go to new time periods, go to new places. There's so much to do. Theoretically, there's so many different places to go and so many different eras to explore that they don't have to. Say like, oh, what did Darth Vader eat on one week between this and that? What was he eating for lunch every day? I really got to know.
Yeah, filler fatigue is a real thing.
Yeah. So I've been slightly disillusioned and frustrated with it. But I don't know. I think Andor, and by the way, like I think you have to talk about, everyone needs to sort of set their, like, what did you think of Rogue One before we talk about what do you think of Andor, probably. I don't think I'm as nutty over Rogue One as a lot of people of my generation were, because again, I felt like it was a very specific slice of time that I kind of liked that being left to our imagination a little bit more. But I can't deny that the third act is awesome and super fun and everything you want from a Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I thought Cassian Andor, the character, was probably the most boring part of Rogue One. Yep.
And yet, you're saying people should watch.
And yet, this show, I mean, that's kind of what's interesting about this. It's almost like, let's take something that really didn't have much going for it and see if we can make it interesting.
Let's
take another crack at this guy and see if people will actually enjoy learning more about him. And for like the first couple episodes of this, I was like still a little on the fence on that front. I was like, I'm not sure if I'm not fully bought into like whether I should care about this. But the third episode I think was really like at least had enough narrative momentum that I was like, okay, this is a cool, I just, what I've been walking away from each episode feeling like is this is such a cool part of the Star Wars universe that we don't get to see much of. Mm-hmm. I just like visiting that era. It's like going to Galaxy's Edge at Disneyland. You're like, can I just live in this world for a little right. while?
Yeah, there is so much world building going on and elements in this show that we haven't really seen in live action Star Wars before, like actual laborers,
yeah,
corporations, streetwear, like, and most importantly, right. we follow all these elements like home or to the mm-hmm. office, and that's like the really new part of it. This show, for me, didn't need to be about Andor at all. It could have just been about right. Operator X, mm-hmm. you know, just a story about how somebody gets sucked into this conflict, not having cared originally or just trying to mind their own business when trouble yeah. comes to you. And the fact that it's all wrapped up in sort of this World War II espionage tale is very much my jam. Like Star Wars meets Operation Mincemeat or Agent Zigzag. Like, yes, please. It's very much feels crafted for me. And by the time you hear this, the fourth episode will be out. And judging by all the trailers, that's when they introduce the other element, which is going to be the political intrigue part of it, which plays directly back into the whole, you know, Tinker Tailor Soldier spy stuff that's yep. going on here. And you mix all that together, and it's definitely something that I'm interested in. And the number one, like in the word, what is that thing? The word salad?
The word cloud.
Slow burn is definitely the biggest phrase you'll see mm-hmm. when people have been yeah. talking about this show critically. But I feel like that is part and parcel with what they are trying to do here. Two things. One is an espionage tale. Two is actually having a look at the people that live in the galaxy and how they live. Granted, that's not for everybody. There have been other big pop culture franchise things that have messed with that a little bit. The most recent terrible one was Peanut Butter Falcon and the Winter Snowman from yeah. Marvel, which tried a little bit of it, but then like says, nah, let's get back to the superhero stuff. And they sort of like, but this one I feel like is going full tilt into that world. And mm-hmm. I'm kind of loving it because it's something very new.
Yeah. Slow burn is one term that keeps coming up in reviews. The other, especially in positive ones, is adult. So right. let's turn to this, Sarah, as someone who pretty much just dips in on the Star Wars TV universe when we make you for this podcast. What was that your read on it? What did you feel this was more adult, and did adult mean good for you?
I did, and it did. The pacing is definitely a little stately. Mm-hmm. And Cassian Andor himself is definitely like, and you know, this is just a problem with pop culture products sometimes, is that in order to get yourself a big enough canvas to work with, you have to pick the blankest blank that
yeah,
there
yeah.
is. I don't think he's that boring. Diego Luna is good, but that's just how things get pitched and made, I think. Mm-hmm. What I don't know is a lot. But I think that this is one of those properties that, like, at this point in the life of that IP, AT-AT Walker lumbering around the landscape, kids ask your parents, it has to be for Star Wars, like people super steeped in the lore.
Right.
And it has to be for people like me who are like, didn't see anything after the third prequel because the third prequel enraged us. And we were like, fuck you, George Lucas, and everything to do with this. Mm-hmm. And I liked The Mandalorian a lot. I thought Obi-Wan was fine, but not worth continuing with. Boba Fett, I didn't bother with it. But this was sort of like, there are a lot of people in this cast that I like. They immediately made it clear that it was a like noir in space, mm-hmm. but also maybe 1870s space, although even that sci-fi was still about hexagons. And it was taking its time on things that this franchise sometimes doesn't think it needs to, like differentiating characters from each other.
Yeah.
Yes, everybody is still wearing packing blankets for costumes, so there is like that consistency sure. within
true.
The franchise.
Mm-hmm. You have to tell it like it is, Sarah.
Yeah, but I was interested, and I also didn't feel like, okay, this new droid is basically like, you know, WALL-E via some dark aisle at Home Depot in the past slash future, but right. I didn't feel sold to. I didn't feel like I was being marketed to. I thought that this was like legitimately narrative and not so much
the next toy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I like this. Yes, it's a little slow moving. And I have read some objections that are like, you know, we don't need a 10-hour movie. Like, we actually want serialized TV. Like, it's not that slow, but I can see how some people who are more focused on the IP's lore and completism might find it impatience-baking. I didn't have that experience.
Yeah.
My pitch to anybody who's, should I watch it, would be like, do you want to see what AMC would have done with Star Wars?
Yes. Mm-hmm. There it is.
I love Mad Men and Breaking Bad. And although Breaking Bad had a real propulsive force to it narratively, I think Mad Men was a super slow burn that absolutely paid off. And I don't know if this show's going to pay off, but I think it's interesting to see somebody take the universe of Star Wars and apply that approach to it, because it's so different. Rogue One was a little bit bleak and a little bit darker and a little grittier than normal Star Wars, but this is like way beyond that to me. Like, it's way more, like you said, adult. And I don't know, if you had just told me that like a month ago, I would have been like, I don't know if I want that, because I kind of am precious about what Star Wars should be. But honestly, to me, it reminded me mostly of Blade Runner and also the Blade Runner sequel. Like, it feels more like Blade Runner than it feels like Star Wars. And I happen to love Blade Runner, too. So I'm like, I'm absolutely on board for a show like that. That's cool.
Yeah, I got a Samurai Jack vibe from it, from the way that it could be witty, but also very like sad, like the bittersweetness reminded me of some Samurai Jack episodes. Yeah. Got to rewatch that.
Well, yeah. The BMO is very much Marvin the Paranoid Android from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy vibe.
Yeah.
So you get some of that there for sure.
I thought it was cool that they cast Conky from Pee-wee's Playhouse in that role.
That would be kind of fun if he actually spit out little pieces of tape. After he talked to you, you get like a...
Yeah, he should give Cassian the secret word once, just for funsies.
Yeah. What we're seeing on our Discord is that even a lot of people who like Star Wars and who also, no offense to them, they know who they are, who like to like things, have bailed on this show quickly because they found it boring. And I wonder, like, I'm gonna ask Matt and Dave in particular, is like the more Star Wars knowers, does it seem like this is for some people, like, it does it seem like they tried to overcorrect and make this like a Star War for people that don't like Star Wars?
I think they gave themselves the freedom not to do pew pew pew,
right?
I mean, I think that's the start of it, and a lot of that has to do with having, you know, the writer of Michael Clayton says, I want to do this project. And they're like, okay, but if I am going to do it, I'm going to do it. And they finally gave somebody full license just to do whatever they wanted.
Right.
It feels like, you know, Lucasfilm is pretty well known for having fingers in the pie all the time, having a lot of trouble keeping talent after they've hired them. The Rogue Squadron movie with Patty Jenkins has apparently disappeared now. That's not happening. So they're having some trouble. So maybe this is like the first of, oh, you know, if we actually do want top tier talent, we're actually going to have to let them do what they want to do. Sometimes you get a Ragnarok. Sometimes you get Love and Thunder. We'll just have to roll the bones. But I feel like they like immediately put the stake in the ground. It was like, the first episode starts off very Blade Runner-y. You got your red light district. They got like one of the first things is a red light. And then you've got the prostitutes in the bubble. Then you got the brothel with the penis shaped hallways. Like, everything is happening very quick to say that your expectations may not be met if you want more Baby Yoda. And I think that's fine. I mean, I think it's fine on both sides. If you're not into Star Wars, if you're not into this new style of Star Wars because it is not that, I think that's fine. Like, I don't criticize anybody for not liking Winter Soldier, Snowman, Peanut Butter Falcon. I certainly didn't. And the same thing here, even though I think this is much, much better executed than that series was.
Yeah,
it kind of feels like Disney has reached the point where by necessity, they've decided we can't make every single one of these Marvel and Star Wars properties for everybody. We at some point we have to say, well, this is going to be only for a certain subset of the total audience. And, you know, people like She-Hulk is a great example of that. Like, She-Hulk isn't for every Marvel fan, but it might be of interest to a few people who don't care about Marvel. And that, I think, is their larger goals. Like, you know, what can we do? What fun things can we do with this, with these characters and with this world that just expands it and makes it more inclusive, which I think is a noble and worthy goal. I know they're just doing it for profit. It's not like they're trying to save the planet or anything, but but yeah, I think, you know, this one isn't for everybody, and that's probably maybe one of the things I like about it. I, as someone who has, again, is very precious about what Star Wars is and isn't, I think it's, I'd much rather them experiment on Disney Plus than with, you know, the sequel to the, one of the mainline movies, because I think that they got in trouble trying to auteur theory the sequel trilogy. For my money, they got in trouble trying to do that. And I would have much rather seen Rian Johnson take a crack at a you know, Outer Rim story of with nobody we've ever met before than just taking on, you know, the death of Luke Skywalker. Spoiler alert.
There were some things that they did in this series in the first three episodes that I didn't know that I actually wanted coming into it. Like, I was always curious about what a more sort of mature take on Star Wars could be, a character first sort of study. But the scene between Cyril, the go-getter corporate guy, and his immediate superior.
Yeah.
Where his immediate superior
This, that's what I fell in love with the show, actually.
Exactly. Yeah. this Deadwood Hot Fuzz combo conversation about crime statistics and having to explain things to the Empire, and why is in everybody's best interest just to paint these people as very minor heroes that Andor killed at the start of the first episode. I was like, I actually do want that in my Star Wars. I don't want it all the time. Yeah. Yes. I do also want to see Baby Yoda being cute and stormtroopers getting headshot and all that sort of stuff that is Star Wars, you know, classic, you know, but I'm kind of enjoying this new Coke as well.
Yes.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, like that those guys are super specific characters. And I think that's something you expect Star Wars to be very broad. And this goes completely the opposite direction. It's like super narrow. And it's like, you know, this is bureaucracy even beyond the like the Empire or the New Order bureaucracy that we've seen, where, you know, like General Hux in the sequel trilogy is a super cartoony character. This is like, this guy Cyril is basically like the more realistic version of that character, like this real ass kissy like go getter who's trying to, he thinks he's right and he thinks he's the good guy, and that's just so much more interesting than having a guy just be like a bad guy for the sake of, we need a bad guy here.
Look how Yoda can yell.
Yeah, Dave, while we were watching it, was like, this is a real Zach Woods moment. And he does have Zach Woods vibes of like that sort of hapless, just losery guy. I mean, he's a corporate security guard. He has Empire bootlicker aspirations. And yet this actor is English, like all of the classic Star Wars villains have been, but he's not doing an English accent. Do we support this choice? Sarah, you go first.
I didn't notice it, so I was fine with it.
Okay.
That was just such an interesting choice of like a character to satirize in this particular franchise galaxy, like literally, that it was like, oh, that guy. And then they took the time to, like, he has this super like militaristic, I want to, you know, crack some skulls and chew some space gum and we're almost out of space gum guy backing him up. That guy gives the speech, and then this, you know, green never seen combat guy is like trying to inspire them, and they're basically checking their space phones.
The only thing that scene was missing was a to the camera office look, you know?
Yes, like, totally.
Yes. Yes. And I was just like, that this franchise is taking the time to think about what these scenes are really like for rank and file people trying to sort of observe and execute on the broad strokes of the franchise to date was like, huh.
Yeah.
Like, even when it was like a little slow, or I was like, okay, we get it. Like, this flashback has been going on a little too long. It was in conversation with other properties outside the franchise. And it was also almost like daring us that it's like, oh, now we're going to do our all cops are bastards moment.
Right.
What we are? Huh. So even when it was slow, I was still interested to see what they were going to do next.
Yeah. The moment in that first scene when his boss asks him, did you modify your uniform? Is like such a tiny line that like reveals so much about who that character is. I thought was great. Yeah, I love that detail.
Am I crazy too? I don't know. Maybe I'm way too deep on Star Wars, but is this the same corporation that runs Star Tours at Disneyland? Because their uniforms are very reminiscent. If you go on Star Tours, the ride, I feel like everybody there is dressed in those blue and orange things. And I'm like, is this what's going on? Like these, so these guys are basically just like the Greyhound bus of the universe.
Or someone's a huge Mets fan.
Oh, could be.
Speaking about Greyhound buses, I'm going to ask each of you a question, and I will let you know at the end of the question round if anybody got it right. Who is your favorite character in this show, Tara?
Oh, I mean, I really like Stellan Skarsgård as Luthen Rail, possibly the future founder of the Raelians, as we learned a lot about in Canada.
Matt?
Yeah, I have to agree that I think Luthen. I'm looking at my cheat sheet because like it's hard for me to keep character names at least this early on straight. Like most interesting is Cyril, but I think like Luthen is the guy that you're like, okay, like everything got going once he shows up.
And, yeah, he's the catalyst for sure.
Yeah, and also, I mean, Stellan Skarsgård like is just a brilliant actor who you can't.
The
not...
superior Skarsgård. Yes. I'm not a crackpot.
Sarah, yeah. Favorite character.
Honorable mention to Marva, but yeah, Skarsy for sure.
Close, but the actual best character in this show is the new best friend, I hope, to Power Droid, a droid to come Stairsy. When the Greyhound bus comes in, there's a little stair droid that comes, slides up to let everybody step down for the bus.
Oh,
and I love that thing. I want to give it a space hug. I could not believe how cute that thing was.
Yeah, I think my college roommate texted me. I think he's having like a bit of a crisis over the fact that stairs are sentient in this world. It's like he cannot deal with like the ramifications of that right now.
Yeah, the droid revolt from the movie Solo, if it actually sort of happened in this timeline and it like backs away from the bus, everybody's just like stranded on the bus floating. Final thought, our first full swear in Star Wars was in this series. Work for you or not?
I totally missed it. What was it?
Okay, so when in the third episode, the Sicario sort of scene where they're raiding homes and they're trying to flush out Andor, and all the banging stops, you know, all the warning bangings from all the citizens. The Irish cop corpo guy says, "Oh shit." And you missed it.
Oh, I missed. I was so engrossed in it, I didn't even notice.
So I guess it worked in context. It didn't really stick out like a sore thumb to me, but I was like, after, it's like, I'm pretty sure that's the first time anybody's ever, like, I think in Solo, there was a shh, and that was it.
Right.
But this one, we actually got the full word. That's funny.
I think Marva swears, like, in the first episode also, which, I mean, about fucking time, really. Grow up.
All right, it's time to go around the dial talking about TV we have been watching recently. First up, Tara.
Hello. 911 is back on Fox for season 6. And if there's one thing 911 is going to do, it's kick off the season with a giant two-part catastrophe. They are honestly probably never going to top the tsunami washing out the Santa Monica Pier, but you still immediately get a shiver when you see there is a blimp, B, being co-piloted by Gabrielle Carteris, C, on its way to a flyover above a soccer stadium. It's women's soccer, so the stadium's not as full as it could be, but still. My favorite thing is that it requires Carteris's character to climb down from the blimp cockpit on the fire truck ladder, and there was no thought to shoot any pickups of like her herself in a close-up, like with the sky behind her or anything. So all you see is just the back of her stunt double's head the entire time, including when she's on the actual ground. But the second best save of the first episode involves a titanium wedding band and a wood chipper.
Oh, my God. I give it up on these shows. Honestly, that moment might have brought me back in. It was perfect.
It's fantastic. In the 118's personal lives, Maddie and Chim are back together. Who cares? After several years of marriage, Athena and Bobby, the worst couple on television, are getting ready to take their first trip together. It is a cruise, and at first you think that all of Bobby's intense planned daddery about it is because he is a dad and he loves to plan, but then Athena tells Hen that the ship has 11 bars. He's in recovery. She assumes that Athena's trying to pack every second with other activities so he doesn't want to drink. Another curiosity of cruises, which I learned when I took one, booze is free, soft drinks are not, so maybe you should have thought of a different trip if you are an alcoholic. Anyway, the other reason this is noteworthy, is being away for a week means that Bobby has to name someone interim captain. He picks Han, and then Buck gets into an existential funk about it that I guess we're going to have to keep hearing about.
Shut up, Buck.
Buck's the worst character on television.
I've seen 1.5 episodes of this. Shut up, Buck.
Buck is bad.
Always.
Fucking Buck. Yeah.
The season premiere ends with Athena on the phone with her mother in Florida right before the cruise, which is when Athena's dad drives the car into the sunroom. So second episode is all about Athena and Bobby missing their trip to go and deal with all of the fallout from this. There's a lot of talk about parenting your parents, and you think snooze again until the contractor starts to work rebuilding the sunroom and finds a body under the house. So surprise, it's a season opening three-parter. We have to wait until next week to find out if Athena's father is a murderer. One other note about this episode, the second episode, which was last night as we were taping this. We've talked before about the scourge on TV of expectations subverting music covers, but one segment of this episode involves Disaster at a Happiness Convention. And this song has to be the end for this trope. Dave, please play that clip.
So bad.
Here's a little song I wrote. I wanna sing.
My God.
Don't worry.
Okay.
Be happy.
There's more of this song. I cut it off after just one verse.
Oh,
I
my God.
Couldn't believe it. The balls someone had to make a sad cover of Don't Worry, Be Happy. Anyway.
I got two items to add to your report.
Please.
One, just because we left it dangling, I will explain that amazing scene that okay. got me back into the show, which is they're golfing.
It's a father and son.
Father and son golfing. And there's a wood chipper crew just doing maintenance, and they have to start and stop as the golfers are going. And the kid who doesn't really want to be there, of course, smacks a golf ball into the wood chipper, and it's right there in the prongs where you put the branches. So he reaches in to get it, and it's a very tense scene. And it starts, and he pulls back, but he's still got all his fingers, and he's got the golf ball. And he's like, where's my ring? And like, what happened is it grabbed his ring and the ring is in the wood chipper. And then the wood chipper instantly goes into firing mode again. And it shoots the father who's on the other
right
side
in the chest.
With the ring, right in the chest, like he just got shot mafia style. And then he's down. And I'm like, all right, I actually didn't see that coming. Well done. See, that's what I want every episode from this show.
Yes,
like,
of course.
I don't want regular fire, you know, oh no, burning building, where's my baby, where's my cat?
Yeah.
I want the ring out of the wood chipper. I want the volcano that yeah. erupts in Austin on 911 Lone Star. Mm-hmm. If they could do that, if they do that every week, this would be the number one show of all time.
I agree.
And number two is if they get back to the cruise somehow.
I think the cruise is off, but go
okay,
ahead.
But if they reschedule it,
yeah.
they're setting themselves up for like a Poseidon adventure on 911, right?
Shit, you're right. Yeah. They could have a cruise save. All right, good point.
Or the poop ship.
Right.
Oh, yeah, right.
It's not that second thing. Ah, poop ship.
All right. For my plugs, this is the end of the month, which means that over on the Patreon for, again, with this, our 90210 and Melrose Place podcast, we are dropping our episode of it again with them. That is when we do a digest of all the episodes of 90210 OMG that Jenny Garth and Tori Spelling did this month. I know I say this every month. This is truly one of the roughest ones. There's a pee story. That's all I'm going to say. You need to pay $5 to get into that Patreon and hear all about it. Patreon.com/againwiththis. I'm also going to mention the Patreon for our sister podcast, Listen to Sassy. Go to listentosassy.com/club. We have a small stretch goal going right now. And if we hit it, if we get to 325 Patreons, Pam, our co-host, is going to do live tarot readings on Zoom. They are very real and very authentic. So listentosassy.com/club for that. And finally, Johnny Knoxville is in a new sitcom on Hulu called Reboot, and I interviewed him about that, and that's at vanityfair.com. And links to all of these will be in the show notes.
All right, Matt, what have you been watching recently?
I just finished the new season of Never Have I Ever, which every time it ends, I cry. And then I go, I can't wait for the next season. And I think the next season is the last season. So
that's right.
The crying will be intense.
Because of John McEnroe?
Yeah. I love this show so much. Like I wish more people watch it. I don't know. Maybe people do watch it. I have no idea in the weird world of Netflix if this show is popular.
Four seasons is more than most shows get.
That's true. Yeah.
These days.
But if like Tara, I'm a fellow big 90210 head from way back in the days when it was actually on television for the first time. And this to me combines like the fun of the sort of the soapy drama of high school, the high school experience with in Southern California specifically, with the joke writing and just the all around enjoyment of the things like the Mindy Project, which I also loved a lot. So it makes me laugh every week. And I really care about the characters. I think they do a great job of making these characters three dimensional and flawed and sympathetic and interesting. And yeah, I love it so much, and I want more people to enjoy it the way I do.
And this season was the best season yet, I think.
I agree. Yeah. I think I need to just go back and watch all three seasons at some point before the final one comes.
Well, I did that this summer because I wanted before I started watching season three because I was interviewing Poorna Jagannathan. So I rewatched all of season one and two because it had been so long, and it's very rewarding. But also watching them in a compressed time period it's rough. It's a lot.
Is it weird? Yeah.
Well, it's emotional, like you said.
Yeah, that is sure. I thought you meant because they're all like 35 years old.
Oh, now. No.
That's also in keeping with the 90210 tradition.
It sure
though.
Is. It sure
true.
Is.
True. Speaking of Gabrielle Carteris.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. She's I'm ageless. Sorry. What are you talking about?
Nothing.
And what would you like to plug?
Oh, just my podcast, Never Not Funny, that I do with comedian Jimmy Pardo. Way too long episodes every week that people who enjoy it really enjoy it. So we'll just keep doing it. So yeah, check out nevernotfunny.com or wherever you get podcasts. We've had recently Andy Richter was on. That was a good episode. I don't know, Tara, who else? What are some good ones recently?
Oh,
I'm going to put you on the spot because you're a fan and I appreciate your support.
So. I was so happy when Rich Sommer came back. He's one of my favorite guests.
Yeah, he's one of the all-time great guests of ours. So yeah, you can go through the our feed and find somebody that you enjoy. Hopefully there's someone you enjoy in our archives.
There definitely will be.
Yeah. A lot of TV people, a lot of John Hamm was on around when Top Gun came out, and he's mm-hmm. a good friend of ours from back in the day. So yeah. Go enjoy that. And if you really love it, you can subscribe to the Platinum, which is an extra episode every week, and you can watch it on video. In addition to listening to the audio, yeah. And we do bonus stuff. And
it's worth it. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Oh,
worth it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Cool. Sarah D. Bunting.
Not worth it, department.
Oh.
Law and Order, Organized Mothership Victims crossover event. Okay, I guess we could call it cleverness of a sort. The manner in which the Law and Orderverse swirled all three of its iterations together. So you had to watch all three episodes of last week's triple crossover event, which in my notes, I called various things like Law and Order, unearned self-importance, Law and Order, Ukraine doesn't have enough shit going on without dragging them into this exercise.
Oh, no.
Law and Order, I'm sorry you don't have enough money to make Hargitay's executive producer nut without injuring other ladies' characters and then obliging them to pretend to deadline that it's fine. Mm. This 3 hours, which could have been an email. He was also fine. I mean, not Jeffrey Donovan's accent, which never gets further south than Fall River, Massachusetts, ever. Dick Wolf's version of Polly Perrette in Organized Crime is superfluous. She has good hair, but whatever. And I probably should not have been giggling at Christopher Maloney's passing a kidney stone in Tenso glare while he was fakely green screen driving to a crime scene / hostage situation that was being negotiated by Benson. Why? But that's the franchise at this point. It's like dogs eating cat poo. You don't have to like it, but if you choose to share a household with both, it's happening, and just don't let anyone lick your face. I did have a point, and it's this. Speaking of mediocre writing, Jesus, this was perfectly professionally crafted by numbers manipulation. Unfortunately, the net effect, which was evident a quarter of the way into this thing, was not to make the case, as it were, for all three shows, but to call into question the necessity of having all three shows. Like, why don't you just dump them all in a blender every week and give them, like, 80 minutes. Certainly nobody was asking. First of all, I'd like to note that I wrote this like 3 days ago before we figured out that they cut a key Rollins-Carisi-Rolisi scene where Carisi's freaking out that Rollins got shot. Spoiler. Nobody was asking for Peter Scandavino to try to cry and not be given another couple of takes. Bless his heart. Like, I really like this actor, but I think it's probably good that that got cut for later Hulu revisiting. Not that anyone's going to do that because there was no point to any of this, but please don't make your actors try to cry and not give them a chance to actually do it correctly. Mm-hmm. For my plug, you will not be crying about the price of new books at my all true crime bookshop. That's called Exhibit B Books.
Hey.
Anything tagged hot off the press is 10% off all week. Just enter code EQB at checkout to get the discount. I'll have a link to that cart discount-o-fire in the show notes. Crap ton of secondhand stuff too, of course, including a recent arrival to the shelves in the form of SVU veteran Richard Belzer's crackpot journey through the JFK assassination. It's called Hit List.
Wow.
So come look around, see what's new. That's exhibitbbooks.com. And again, there will be a link in the show notes.
All right, it's time for an update on what J.J. Walker is up to these days. The answer was provided at 3 o'clock a.m., and here it is.
Hi, it's me again. Listen to this. Medicare Part C plans with extra benefits like getting money added back to your Social Security check every month may now be available to you in your zip code. Make sure you're not missing out. It's simple. One, call the number on your screen. Two, they'll look up your zip code and see if you're eligible. Three, they'll check for plans with extra benefits like prescriptions, dental coverage, and the benefit that adds money back to your Social Security check every single month. Call now. Dynamite! Call now.
I was really scared he wasn't going to say dynamite.
Yeah, the day shift has Joe Namath on these.
It does. Oh, yeah.
Those get mixed in with the late night Frasers as well.
Grimsby, but Ontario.
Yeah.
Oh, money. Boy. Money.
Money.
Yeah. All right, guys. I'm happy to report that the EHG sticker collection is back. So if you're on the Patreon and have not requested your stickers, just go to our Patreon. Click on the link, fill out your address. Free stickers will be on their way to you. We've got an EHJ sticker. We've got Is This Worse Than Jazz sticker. And we have the space sticker. All right, right here on the next Extra, Extra Hot Great this Friday, it is joining the Old Navy. Who are the most famous and the least famous celebrities that you could see actually doing an Old Navy commercial? Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting thought experiment.
Yep.
Famous, but not too famous.
Right.
Unknown, but maybe just a little bit known. Just a little bit. So we went through our choices for that. That's coming on Friday. And then right here next week on EHG Prime, it is AMC's Interview with the Vampire, blah, with Karina Longworth of You Must Remember This. Woo-hoo!
He doesn't like you, he's grumpy as can be. He doesn't like fun, that's plain to see. Time to ask, will Dave hate this?
Probably.
This was reported last week in Variety. David Zucker of Airplane and Naked Gun fame is creating a TV series that's basically a spoof of Nordic noir crime shows. So like The Bridge or The Killing or whatever. The Chestnut Man, which we recently watched on Netflix.
The Chestnut Man.
Which is, I have to say, money. Pretty good. Yeah. What was that Finnish one? That Deadwind? That one's coming back soon too. Anyway.
Oh, I got your Deadwind.
Yeah.
Sorry. I had to.
Yeah.
So our question today, will Dave hate this? I say that he will for the following reasons. Dave has enjoyed, in addition to, you know, Zucker actual product like Airplane and the Naked Gun series, he has enjoyed other Zucker-esque shows on TV more recently, like Angie Tribeca, NTSF, SDSUV, Children's Hospital. However, it's been many a year since Dave watched anything that David Zucker did. One of Zucker's more recent credits is 2008's An American Carol, which is a right-wing spoof targeting Michael Moore with Chris Farley's brother Kevin playing the fake Michael Moore.
Oh, no.
Frazier is also in this thing. So David Zucker is either like that now, or maybe he always was and we just didn't know. And thirdly, I'm going to say we've watched a fair amount of Nordic noir. There are certainly some tropes that are ripe for spoofing. If I never see another lady detective with a messy life and messy updo, I think I'll be fine. But I wonder if it may be too narrow a genre to sustain an entire show. Sarah, you say he will not. What is your rationale?
Well, he likes the genre being parodied. He does like previous Zucker product. And your point about Zucker possibly being a, you know, Scott Baio
right.
Is well taken. But the creators really are comedians and screenwriters who are Scandi. So while there's always a danger with these things, with the you can't send up what you don't have down problem, I don't think that's a factor here. And any jokes that don't work might just get lost in translation somehow. Mm-hmm. And one of the executives involved in greenlighting this referred to the project's, quote, left field vibe that is the hallmark of Finnish creativity. And I know Dave does not hate some rando humor. So I think the fact that there might be just enough of that Zuckerian vibe mm-hmm. to make it fun, but not enough to make it, you know, fascist.
Right.
fascist apologia.
Sure.
And that actual Scandi people are dug in to do this Nordic noir. I think it's got a shot. I do not think he will hate it.
All right. I will say The Aeroplane is like just one of those movies from my youth that is like up on a pedestal and it just stays there. I know it's dumb and, you know, some parts obviously don't age well, but nevertheless, it was just like a that and like Monty Python were very influential in forming my sense of comedy when I was young. He had, David Zucker, a great run of product. He had Aeroplane, Police Squad, the TV yep. show, and then Top Secret, which is the yes. sort of the secret best one of his movies.
True.
I think we have met somewhere before.
The Naked Gun. And then it stops. Then he did like the Naked Gun sequels, which sucked. And then like he kind of disappeared and then like did some of the scary movies.
Yes.
But by that point, a lot of the spoofs were just other characters doing the exact scenes from movies. Here is this character doing bullet time from The Matrix.
Right.
That's the joke.
Yes, it's a reference, right. Not a joke.
So by that time, with the exception of maybe Your Mileage May Vary, Basketball, which he was also mm-hmm. responsible for, mm-hmm. I think that's sort of a 50-50 toss-up whether people like that or not. Mm-hmm. He hasn't really done a lot in this area since, let's say, Naked Gun. That said, he is just EPing this one. So as Sarah says, I think it comes down to the talent that's writing and directing this locally. And there are a couple of stand-up comedians from Finland, I believe, and they are fine. I looked them up. I watched a couple minutes of each one. Nothing you haven't seen before, but serviceable. Probably better they're doing it than some Americans trying to take on the genre, you know, homegrown talent, mm-hmm. all that. Like, it is definitely genre ripe, like 70s disaster films, like 80 action films, you know, just full of stupidity waiting to be skewered. But like, honestly, the series that was out like a year or two ago, The Foreigners, on HBO Max, where the premise is all these people from different time periods are appearing and is set in Scandinavia. Mm-hmm. And it's just like all craziness. Like that show was one third of the way
that's true.
To what they're doing here.
So yeah. was Fortitude, honestly, especially when Dennis Quaid showed up. So
and that show never lived up to its weird premise. Like it was never as weird as you thought it would be. It was just like, oh, okay. It's just a cop show that happens to have people from three different time periods roaming around the streets. So I love it when I can savagely hate something on Will Dave Hate This. And I love it when I'm obviously going to love something for all the wrong reasons, like the first one we did a long time ago, Hieroglyph.
Yeah.
Which I'm still sad never got made. But like, unfortunately, Werewolf by Night last week, this is falling into the unsatisfying middle ground of won't hate it, probably not going to love it. So will not hate it takes a day today. Oh boy, that music means it's time for the goateed evil twin of the canon. It is the Nonak. We're looking at what should be a bad episode of an otherwise good TV show. Tara is presenting this week. Take it away, Tara. Tara's already laughing.
Well, I'm
not setting you up for failure.
I can hear the air quotes around you. I just can hear the air quotes around good because we're talking about Friends. But there are times when I'm presenting in this segment when I feel like I need to explain the show premise, situate listeners and my fellow panelists in the episode's continuity. And there are times when I need to make a detailed critical analysis for why an episode is extraordinarily good or bad. This is going to be about Friends, so I don't need to tell anyone alive what it is about. And it is a basically self-contained episode, so I don't really need to tell you what brought us here. And what makes this episode bad is, I believe, very self-evident. So I will be, I hope, brief in making my argument for why Friends Season 5, Episode 21, The One with the Ball, deserves to be inducted into the NONAC. Number one, Phoebe's storyline is bad and gross. It doesn't really affect the viewer's comprehension of the episode, but it's one tiny bit of serialization lies in Phoebe's relationship with Gary, played by Michael Rapaport. Phoebe had met him back in episode 16, better remembered as the one with Pivot, but that's also where we meet Gary. When she found his badge in the armchair at Central, Perkins decided to start imposing her will on strangers by pretending that it was hers. Somehow, Phoebe and Gary are still together 5 episodes later, and for some reason, Gary confides in Monica that he wants to ask Phoebe to move in with him. And though he specifically says this is a secret, Monica tells Phoebe as soon as Gary has left. Phoebe is as nervous about this as befits someone who's only been dating their partner for 5 episodes. I get why Phoebe doesn't decide the best way through the situation is to have an adult conversation with Gary because she's a character on a sitcom. But here is the first solution that she lands on, clip one.
I can't believe this.
Right, because of fast. Because it's so fast, it's fast.
Relax, it's Phoebe, not you.
Oh, good for you, Phoebs. Way to go.
But it is fast, isn't it?
No.
I like him a lot, but I don't think I'm ready for this.
So what are you going to do?
I don't know. I'll just handle it. I'll ask you to talk to him.
Me? Why me?
Because you are so afraid of commitment. You talk to him. Make him scared like you. Make him a man.
Yeah, I'll try, but I'm not sure what good it would do, you know, because I'm a lot less afraid of commitment than I used to be.
That is so sweet. Mm.
Still terrified. I'll take care of it, no problem.
Petty sidebar. Chandler assures Phoebe that he is still scared of commitment, while Monica has leaned approximately 2 feet away from his head. It is already straining believability to pretend Monica's kitchen is soundproof to people who are yards away in her living room, but Chandler and Monica are basically touching at this point, and somehow we're supposed to believe she doesn't hear that. Anyway, less petty complaint about that exchange. We all have fun generalizing about men because they deserve it. But given that Phoebe is the one in the relationship who is most scared of commitment in this moment, her ordering Chandler to make Gary a man and no one in the scene pointing out the irony is lazy writing. And spoiler, also not the last time, lazy will come up in this presentation. After Chandler tries and fails to make Gary a man, Phoebe does try to tell Gary herself that she thinks it's too soon for them to live together, only to back down immediately when he seems sad about it. However, she hasn't actually changed her mind and is just planning to kick the can down the road by stalling. Gary is a bad enough detective to have lost his badge at a coffee shop, but he does have a basic ability to read people and pulls Phoebe into an interrogation room to interrogate her because, haha, it's funny when cops abuse their power. Clip two.
So you checked the paper for listings in Brooklyn Heights, right? You checked the post?
Yeah, uh-huh, there was nothing. Can I get some water?
In a minute. You checked today's post?
Yeah, today's.
Because, this is today's post, and, these are the listings I found. Brooklyn Heights, 2 bedrooms. Brooklyn Heights, 1 bedroom. Brooklyn Heights, Brooklyn Heights, Brooklyn Heights!
Are these for rent? I thought people were just bragging.
Let me tell you what I think might be going on here. No, don't look at the table. Look at me. Okay? I think somebody asked someone to move in with him. And I think someone said yes, but now she's having doubts because maybe things are moving too fast for someone. Does that sound at all possible to you?
Yes, yes. Yes, fine, I am someone. You want me to say it? I have doubts. I'm sorry.
Phoebe.
Yeah.
Phoebe, it's okay that you feel this way. I mean, it is soon. And there's a lot of things we don't know about each other. I just figured everything I know about you, I really like. And the things I don't know, I'd get to learn about in a place with both our names on the mailbox.
That's so sweet.
Sweetheart. But none of that matters if it's too soon for you. It's fine. We don't have to move in together. I want you to be happy.
Living with you would make me happy.
Phoebe, you don't have to say that.
No, I really want to live with you. I want to move in with you.
Are you sure?
Yes. Definitely. Yes. Let's live in an apartment that we both live in.
Oh, that's great.
Time for Gary and Phoebe to live happily ever after. But whoops, there's a bird outside Gary's window the next morning that he matter-of-factly shoots with a handgun from his nightstand. It's not like I'm all justice for Gary about this. The show's writers decided Gary had run his course and needed to be extracted from the show in a hurry, which, fine. He's one of Phoebe's least likely love interests, and that's a club that also includes Charlie Sheen and Sean Penn. But Phoebe never had any inkling before this that he was an actual sociopath other than his job. This turn of his character is extremely abrupt, even given that this is episode 21 of the season. Number two, Phoebe's hair is bad and ugly. Season 5 was the one immediately after Lisa Kudrow gave birth to her son and cut her hair into a long bob. Evidently, someone thought there was no way Phoebe could have a long bob. So this brought us more than one season of Kudrow wearing hair pieces secured to her actual hair with 1 million doodads. Another petty complaint, but she's a beautiful woman and these overdone hairstyles were so cruel. Number three, Rachel's storyline is bad and out of character. Up to this point, Rachel has only rarely displayed any interest in living creatures who are not full-grown adults, but sure, her grandmother had a hairless cat that Rachel always loved, and therefore she has acquired one for herself at a cost of $1,000. We know Rachel is a free spender, but on something other than clothes, there's just no way. Unfortunately, Mrs. Whiskerson does not have the same fondness for Rachel that her grandmother's cat did. She scratches the hell out of Rachel's arms and hisses at her in a way that sounds like Rachel's name, and Rachel's patience quickly runs out. Clip three.
I give up, you guys. I don't know what I'm going to do with this thing.
Baking it didn't help, huh?
So why don't you just take it back to where you got it? I tried. They won't take her back.
Well, maybe that's because she's a minion of the Antichrist.
Rach, why won't they take it back?
Well, they said they would, but they would only give me store credit. And I mean, what am I going to do, get 1,000 regular cats?
Look, if you want, you can keep it at our place until you find out what to do with it.
No, Mom, that's not the point. I'm out $1,000. I'm all scratched up, and I'm stuck with this stupid cat that looks like a hand.
Driven to desperation, Rachel tries to sell the cat on the street at a profit, no less, declining to take the loss and unload her on the one person, possibly on Earth, who is willing to look at Mrs. Whiskerson more than once. Clip four.
Can't you at least smile or something?
Okay, I know that was not a real cat hiss. It did sound like it could be, and it did sound like Rachel. The only other aspect of this plotline that is funny, on a meta level, mind you, is that Jennifer Aniston looks like she can barely stand touching this thing, and I don't blame her. No offense to any of our listeners who may treasure their own hairless cats, but yuck. Clip five.
So what is this, some kind of snake or something?
Exactly, Gunther. Number four, Joey, Ross, Monica, and eventually also Chandler's storyline is bad and lazy. Recently, there was a tweet going around about how TV seasons used to be 22 episodes long minimum, which gave writers time to mess around with episodes that didn't have to braid into the season story. And wasn't that great? This episode is an excellent reminder that 10 or 13 episodes are plenty for most shows, because otherwise you get a situation where you're in a writer's room, you have to come up with a C-plot for an episode that barely has an A-plot, and no one says anything until someone starts tossing the ball that was in the corner and someone else says, "What if it was that?" Do I know that that's how the plot in which Joey, Ross, Monica, and eventually also Chandler end up seeing how long they can play catch without dropping the ball? I don't know it for a fact, but doesn't it feel true? I assume this plot line made it to air because other pitches regarding pens or laptops or legal pads or restaurant takeout menus didn't go anywhere. This aired on network television on a top 10 show, and it is so lazy. Also, I hate engaging with this dumb plotline on a logic level, but even Monica, with her extreme competitiveness, would not be interested in playing catch for hours after everyone else had lost interest. What is the point of a collaborative game where no one wins? Before drafting this presentation, I listened back to our last Friends Known Act by our friend Joe Reed, his successful pitch on season 7, episode 13, the one where Rosita dies. highlighted how many of that episode's problems grew out of the increase in programming competition presented by Survivor and the unavoidable fact that a sitcom in its seventh season is going to start showing signs of wear. He also said that the difficulty in making a no-knack pitch about Friends is that, quote, the cast has the talent and the comedic timing to keep the episode from bottoming out. There are other episodes that have worse individual storylines than this one, but like Rosita, what makes The One with the Ball extraordinarily bad is that none of its storylines works. To quote our beloved Joe on the subject, quote, a bad Friends episode is such a bummer to me, and as a friend who, a Friends fan who knows the series backwards and forwards at this point and therefore is uniquely qualified to call out its failures, it's a bummer to me as well. I hope you agree and that you will throw The One with the Ball into the no-knack.
Thank you, Tara. All right, Matt, I will give you the ball. You're free to have a first stab at this, but you can also throw the ball to me or Sarah, your choice.
Oh, I'll take. I have a feeling I might be the only one to try to fight the good fight on this one, actually. I like this episode. I think it's funny. It's, to me, it's like somebody got some Seinfeld in my Friends, and I'm all about it. Like I will watch a stupid, pointless Friends episode any day of the week. And I watched it with my wife and daughter the other night. This is not an argument as much as just me I'm going to be rambling a little bit, but so I apologize. We've been watching How I Met Your Mother from start to finish, and we've all been enjoying it fine. But before that, we went through some other shows like Brooklyn Nine-Nine and Parks and Rec and Friends and The Office. And it's crazy to go from How I Met Your Mother, which I enjoy quite a bit, back to Friends, which is basically what How I Met Your Mother wanted to be. Like, they wanted to be the successor to that, because just even a mediocre, I'll admit it's a mediocre episode of Friends, still has more laughs than maybe some of the best episodes of How I Met Your Mother ever made. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I was like, wow, I just laughed out loud 7 or 8 times in 20 minutes. Like, that's kind of amazing. I also think, look, I own a Friends trivia game that came with a ball. Like, that's how this episode is iconic on the level of everybody. If you just say The One with the Ball, everybody knows what you're talking about immediately. Like, I don't know. I don't remember Rosita, but I remember the ball. So, like, it did something to stick in people's mind. And I think it's just because it's so gloriously stupid. And I give that show credit. It was a little too earnest, a little too soapy sometimes. But I kind of appreciate the fact that they were like, let's just make a dumb one and have fun. And the perfect example of that to me is that they took a big swing on, like, how do we get rid of this character that's run its course with Michael Rapaport? I don't know. Let's just have him shoot a bird out the window. Like, it's so insanely not Friends to have that happen.
Yeah.
But I just respect they were so confident in their abilities as a writing staff and as a cast that they were like, yeah, we could pull that off. We could definitely pull that off. Like, no other show of this ilk would be able to. But, I mean, I know. And
are
I
you saying
remember
they did
the time,
pull it off?
I feel they pulled it off.
You felt the gun. Okay. Okay.
I think it's funny. Like, mm-hmm. at the time, I remember watching it when it aired. I remember my friends and I all being like, what the hell was that? That's insane. Yeah. Like, this is nuts. But I've actually come around to appreciating the fact that they were just like, whatever. It's just comedy. Who cares? Let's just do something super surprising and weird and different. And, it made me laugh like that. That's at the end of the day, I feel like I will think of that more than I'll think of a lot of other things that they did on that show that were maybe less crazy or out of character for the tone of it. But yeah, so all I can say is it passes the laugh test for me. And I couldn't disagree with any of your points, Tara, but it really did the basic thing I want a Friends episode to do, which was it entertained me.
He loves to laugh. Sarah D. Bunting.
This seemed to have the same rough proportions of solid comedy and performances to Hasn't Aged Well cringy shit that most Friends episodes do for me. I am not a devotee of the show, nor do I hate it. I just, you know, kind of interact with it through Tara. And when it's, and like I had to teach an episode of it once, which was a pleasure to do. because it is a really well-built and most of the time well-oiled machine. This is not as good, but the Phoebe wig problem is a problem of their own making that they did not solve. It looks like shit. Shout out to her insect necklace in the first sequence, though. I want that. Please at me. Seeing Rappaport playing yet another gooby cop, especially when it was done so much better more recently on Only Murders in the Building. I don't love how much of the humor in this episode comes at the expense of like unwanted animals and like bird death. I mean, like the shooting the bird, fine. Like in terms of it being lazy writing, that's not my issue with it. Sometimes you paint yourself into a plot corner and that part of it's fine. Like, don't be killing things. That's not my favorite. But here's the problem. Like, I don't love that all of this, like this whole plot boiled down to making fun of this poor cat. But I laughed every time. Like, I swear to God, this whole episode was these people like chopping an edible into four pieces and being like, let's do every joke on hairless cats. Let's get them all in. And they were all, I didn't want to laugh. Like, I have known hairless cats. They're very sweet. It's a good solution for the allergic. But I mean, a stupid cat that looks like a hand. And the delivery on that was flawless. Like, this is not a great episode of Friends. If you were pitching it for the canon, I wouldn't vote for it either, but I didn't think it was necessarily terrible enough. Like, there are a lot of things about it that I was a little impatient with. Like, on top of being kind of cruel to animals, it's, again, needlessly cruel to Gunther, like it always is. It's terrible modeling of responsible pet ownership. Perry is in one of those phases where he's just lined up all the ticks in a row and he's running through all of them. And I don't like, he's always been kind of my least favorite friend, frankly. And I just don't, this episode is not a good one for him. Also, he looks like a ham with a bowling shirt on, not his fault, but yeah, I'm just not sure this sank to that level of as bad as the previous one was, because I did laugh a few times and I wasn't like mortally offended. It's not good, but it's not terrible. So I don't know what I'm going to do. Dave Cole.
All right. Well, I can just settle this right now then, because here is my very short reaction to this is I think there's two genuine, shitty, no knack worthy moments in this. One is Chandler joking with the sex workers in the...
Yes, that's also bad.
I meant to mention that. That's the one thing in this episode I cannot defend whatsoever. Yeah. It was ridiculous.
An episode of Friends that somehow does not have a gay panic joke in it.
Yeah.
They almost cleared the bar on didn't age well until that moment. And the other one is shooting the bird. I think I didn't work for me at all. I thought that was kind of cruel. And even though I do appreciate Matt's mention of sort of Seinfeldian moments, you know, with the ball and like maybe the bird falls into that column as well, that totally didn't work for me. So as Sarah just said, this episode for me, like the rest is sort of banal to me and forgettable, not terrible and memorable for all the wrong reasons, which I think a no knack should be. Like, this episode is, oh, it's that episode. It should be, this episode. And it's just, this episode for me. So I'm going to probably say it is not no knack worthy, but let's make this official. Matt Belknap, is this episode no knack worthy? If you say yes, you mean it's a bad episode, just to be clear.
I say no.
All right. Sarah D. Bunting.
Yeah, it's a no for me, dog / hairless cat.
All right, so that means, in an inverse sort of way, everybody saying is a good episode means, or not a good episode, but not a bad episode means you have failed.
Right.
Therefore,
I understand.
Yes, logic puzzles, they're tough. Friends, Season 5, Episode 21, The One with the Ball. Unfortunately, you are not inducted into the extra hot, great no knack.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
Time to find out who the winner and the loser of the week is. Sarah has this week's winner.
It's True Detective season 4, which I think I thought I dreamed that that was happening. So yeah. I'm also an auxiliary winner because that is real. And the real winner is the show, because for season 4, they're adding Fiona Shaw and Christopher Eccleston and John Hawks, a.k.a. my husband's secret celebrity twin. So, yay.
Congratulations, Sarah. And loser of the week.
This is, it's kind of a win. This is a bit of a cheat, but so Netflix is a joke, which is their Twitter feed for their comedy stuff. They claim, and I am dubious about this, but I also am not mad about it. They claim that they had an AI watch every episode of Cobra Kai and then boil it down to a video that they made. It involves a stingray fighting a hawk. That's all I'm going to say, because it's 3 minutes of Cobra Kai tropiness. That is definitely worth your time. We're going to link it in the show notes. It is so stupid.
One more spoiler from the video, which I thought spoiled it down, is the Johnny character saying, "We are now friends." "No, we're not friends." "Yes." "No, maybe."
"Maybe
that
later."
That is Cobra Kai in a nutshell.
Yes, exactly.
All right. Well, speaking about changing your mind repeatedly and then probably answering the wrong thing, do you know what time it is?
It's game time.
Oh, it's got to be game time.
All right, everybody, buckle in. This is the 10th game time of the seasons. Our scores are Tara has 4, Sarah has 3, value guests have 2. You only need 5 points to win the season, so Tara could clinch it today. And today we are playing Captain Nita's Oops All Star Wars, a game from myself with a lot of help from the good folks at EHG Assist on Twitter. Thank you to everybody there for helping out. Star Wars has taken over television. Everything is now Star Wars, and everything that was is also now Star Wars. In this game, I will give you a description of an existing TV show that is now a Star Wars show.
Okay.
You give me the before and after style title of the new show. And to remind our listeners, a before and after answer is two elements that run in together via a shared word or sound. And for the purposes of this game, the definite article "the" can be dropped when you're combining two things. Here is an example, a description of a show that is now a Star Wars show. A farm boy from Tatooine leaves home to become a law enforcer in the Lone Star State. There's a Star Wars element and a TV show that are now a new Star Wars TV show. What would be the answer there? Anybody?
Skywalker, Texas Ranger?
Luke Skywalker, hey. Texas Ranger is how you put those two things
all
together.
Right.
I might actually watch that. No promises.
There's a lot of shows here that I would definitely tune into. You can guess right away for 2 points. That would be a 2-point answer from Sarah.
Yeah.
If you don't know it or you answer incorrectly, I will move on and give you a hint. That hint is usually actors involved on both sides of the equation. After that, an answer is worth 1 point. So your clue would have been Mark Hamill and Chuck Norris for that one. Pay attention to the order of elements in the description. They will match the order of elements in the answer. So if you hear a Star Warsian thing first, the Star Wars part will be the first part of your answer. All right. The element from Star Wars is most often a character, but it could be anything from Star Wars. Place, object, a title of a Star Wars movie. You never know.
Okay.
The other part is always a TV show title. One last note, and this is very exciting for Mr. Matt Belknap. There is a mystery bonus point in play for Matt. We'll see if he manages to get it.
Wow.
All right. Steel mill situation and explanation, please, Tara.
Thank you. Sarah D. Bunting has 12 steel meals. I have 10. Valued guest has 9 plus Eric's meal. This is the lore that we were talking about before we started recording. So steel meal is if you can steal an answer from someone else after they get it wrong, you just have to say steel meal real fast before Dave gives the correct answer, and then you can steal those points.
Yes, and for in this game, because we're getting free guesses, you can only use this DML after the second incorrect guess that anybody would have. All right, a lot of explanation for before and after game, but here we are. Let's throw the person in control choosing initiative to see who's going first.
We will start with Sarah.
All right, order today. Sarah will go first, then Tara, then Matt. 33 questions, 11 questions apiece. Are we ready to play Captain Nita's Oops All Star Wars?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
All right, Sarah D. Bunting, here is your description. The final steward of the original Death Star takes time out of his busy schedule to educate you about cryptozoological myths and supernatural mysteries. Combining a Star Wars thing and a TV show into a new Star Wars TV show. Give me the title of that new Star Wars TV show.
Could you read me the clue again, please?
The final steward of the original Death Star takes time out of his busy schedule to educate you about cryptozoological myths and supernatural mysteries. Get a free guess. If you get it wrong, I'm going to give you that hint. It's definitely a show that you enjoy.
Yeah, I mean, I get that sense. And I feel like when I ask for the hint, the second part of it will probably be your friend and mine, Robert Stack. Mm-hmm. But I can't get to the first part. So could I have the hint, please?
All right. Your hint is, and it's not Robert Stack, Peter Cushing and Leonard Nimoy.
My head is now emptied of Star Wars characters. That's let's try. Palpatine search of
Steel Mill.
Steel Mill from
Yay!
That. Admiral Tarkin search of.
Oh.
We'll give that. He had various things. We're looking for Grand Moff Tarkin
Sorry.
Is close enough. He had various titles. I'm going to give that one to you. Good Steel Mill. That's the way you use it.
Would right. watch that.
Absolutely.
Even though I didn't know it, I'd watch it.
Yes, Dave.
An excitable astromech droid rolls with the punches when his wife passes and leaves him to raise David, Mary, Joni, Susan, Nancy, Elizabeth, Tommy, and Nicholas on his own.
BB-8 is enough.
That is correct. That is a 2-point answer. Well done. All right, first real question, full question for Matt. The dark side of the Force is a pathway to many abilities some consider to be unnatural. That would explain why the Emperor of the Galaxy is somehow pregnant.
Okay.
Keep in mind the order of the clues in what I just read you is the order of the elements in the answer. So if you're thinking of one part, say it out loud, talk yourself through it.
Yeah, I think I got it. Give me the clue one more time. Just
the
so
dark side of the Force is a pathway to many abilities some consider to be unnatural. That would explain why the Emperor of the Galaxy is somehow pregnant.
Yeah, I'm going to say Emperor Palpatine Mom.
Emperor Palpatine Mom is correct.
And I'll even throw in that his first name is Sheev, because I feel bad that I got Grand Moff wrong.
That's not the secret bonus point, but we do appreciate the extra information.
That's good for a Dave point, I feel.
That's good for a Dave point. You're correct. Mm-hmm. Sarah DeBundy. An astromech droid's player lifestyle is complicated when his brother Alan and Alan's son Jake move in. An astromech droid's player lifestyle is complicated when his brother Alan and Alan's sons Jake move in.
R2-D2 and a half men.
You are correct. 2-point right. answer.
Nice.
All right. Same, right.
This is my favorite stupid question of the game. It's for Tara.
Okay.
A gruff moisture farmer has difficulty transitioning to life and love in a small frontier town in the Canadian West in the 1850s, or maybe 1860s, or is it the 1870s, or 1910s, 1940s? It's hard to tell, frankly.
Oh, no. I mean, moisture farmer makes me think it's Uncle Owen, but I don't know the rest of it, so I will take the hint, please.
Joel Egerton.
Yeah.
And Aaron Krakow.
Oh. Nope, I don't have it.
You don't have it?
No.
This is the most obscure one of the game. So if you're worried, everybody worried about that one. This one was really just for Tara because when we watched Frasier at 4:00 in the morning, commercials up the wazoo for
Uncle Owen calls the heart. Of course.
Ow.
All right, Matt.
Yes.
The Lord of Dreams protects a cute little force-sensitive foundling.
The Lord of Dreams. Oh, no. Yeah.
The Lord of Dreams protects a cute little force-sensitive foundling.
Huh.
Anything there ringing a bell?
I guess I... Let me... Foundlings, I'm thinking of Grogu, and I'm thinking of Ahsoka Tano. Or force-sensitive... characters.
Cute little Ford sensitive family.
Cute, yeah. So I feel like Grogu. Although if you've ever seen a very young Ahsoka, she's also pretty cute. There's some animated stuff.
I know you can't see my hands up like that. I'm not touching that, but yeah, that's what I'm doing right now.
I mean, in a fatherly way. Sure. She's an adorable little child.
Like a Padawan.
Yeah. So I guess Grogu, but I'm confused by the dream.
Keep in mind, does not have to be a character on the other side of it. The Star Wars thing could be a place.
Could be a title.
Type of gun.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So can you read it to me one more time before I take the clue, please?
The Lord of Dreams protects a cute little force-sensitive foundling.
Okay, I need that clue.
All right, the clue is Tom Sturridge and Pedro Pascal. Do you know who the Lord of Dream is?
Yeah, I think that's the part that's really stuck on that. Matt's nerd credentials.
I'm out.
All right, no steam mills. The answer there, anybody know it?
The Sand Mandalorian.
The Sandman Mandalorian, yes.
Okay, yeah, okay.
All right, Sarah. A depressed, desert-dwelling space wizard splits his time between cutting up space sushi and watching a little kid from afar. He fixes all his problems with a nose wiggle.
Obi-Wan Division?
Incorrect. Your clue is Ewan McGregor and Elizabeth Montgomery.
Oh, Obi-Wan Kenobi Witch.
Yes, you had to go to the source. I'll take it. The source. Nicely done. All right, good for one. All right, Tara.
Yeah.
This show is sponsored by Kenner, and it is about an Athorian monk trading the cantina life for a teaching career at Millard Fillmore High School in Manhattan.
Okay. Are you saying authoritarian or Arthurian?
Ithorian.
Yes.
It's the name of a creature.
Oh, okay, okay.
I-T-H-O-R-I-A-N.
Got it. Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. Hammerhead of the class.
Hammerhead of the class, yes. Nice. The action figure name for that character who eventually got a whole backstory. Blah, blah, blah. All right, back to Matt. A purple-loving Jedi master tries to find balance in all things, including the pressure of teenage life and being the youngest doctor at the hospital.
It's got to be... Mace Windu Gie Hauser, MD.
Yes, Mace Windu Gie Hauser, MD. 2-point answer. Nicely done. Okay, Sarah D. Bunting. It's not a moon. It's a space station. And Ed McMahon will find it.
What?
It's not a moon. It's a space station. And Ed McMahon will find it.
Yeah, he will.
Oh, Jesus. Publishers Clearinghouse for my head. Okay.
No. We're not
the
doing
Death Star Search.
Yeah, yes.
Death Star Search. Tara.
Yeah.
Former reality show contestants complete weekly challenges and maybe get a second chance at love. But who will end up partnered with the elected Queen of Naboo?
Oh, no. Oh, Bachelor Padme?
Bachelor Padme, yes. That one's a little sweaty, but you got there.
I was like Bachelor in Paradise, and then I couldn't get me there. I remembered about Bachelor Padme.
All right, Matt.
Yeah.
The gregarious leader of the Gungans struggles to maintain his relevancy as young upstart musician Juliet Barnes's star ascends.
Oh, boy. Okay. I, believe it or not, have at least half of this right off the bat. But I need the second part again, please.
All right, I'll read you the whole clue again.
I guess read the whole thing, yeah.
The gregarious leader of the Gungans struggles to maintain his relevancy as the young upstart musician Juliet Barnes's star ascends.
Oh, okay. It's Boss Nashville.
Boss Nashville is correct.
It's amazing. Do I say old font, new font? Yeah! Is that what you're looking
there
for?
There we go. Extra point obtained.
I felt like this has
dance.
To be it. This has
dance
to be it
for us, Matt. Yes, bonus point. Please mark it down. That was what he needed to do. One of my favorite running bits from Never Not Funny.
I miss it.
Being a graphic designer myself, that was my first thought when I saw those credits, and I was so happy to hear that on a podcast.
Yeah, all Monarch right. doesn't have old font, new font. It's just,
you know, yeah, our intern Garen was just telling me how batshit crazy Monarch is, and that it's like he said it's like Nashville meets something. I forget what he said.
Empire, but
probably. Yeah. And I was like, oh, I maybe I should check that out. But if it doesn't have changing fonts in the credit sequence, I'm not. Yeah, I don't know if I need to watch that.
All right, back to Sarah D. Bundy. Sparks may fly in Connecticut when a modern career woman hires an unlikely new nanny, a retired Trandoshan bounty hunter.
I'm not going to know this. You can give me the hint if you want.
Do you know the show?
No, not necessarily.
All right. Your clues are Judith Light and a cheap rubber lizard costume.
Yeah, like I don't know the cheap lizard costume part. So if someone wants to steal
snack
meal back, that, they should.
Or whatever.
Yes,
snack attack.
Snack back Snowville. Yeah. I thought that was your snack back.
Who's the boss?
Who is the boss? Nice. Boss. Yes, being the bounty hunter in question there. Nicely done. Another steal from Matt. Tara.
Yes.
After learning her father booby-trapped the Death Star, a young woman joins a ragtag group of minor celebrities and embarrassing politicians in a dance competition reality show.
Oh, no. I don't remember the character's name, but the last half is Dancing with the Stars. I guess give me the first half. Give me the... I'll take the hint.
Felicity Jones.
Yeah.
And Nigel Lithgow.
Yeah, I don't remember her name.
Matt, steel mail on this one?
Yeah, steel mail. Well, her name's Jyn Erso. So it's Jyn Erso, You Think You Can Dance?
Yes. Steel mail. Good for one point. Wrong TV show you're thinking of.
Yes.
All right, Matt, this is your actual question. This is a kind of a tough one. This is getting into weeds a little bit, so we'll see if you get it. This senior librarian will condescendingly tell you that if it's not in the data banks, then it's not a true American. This is most definitely an in the weeds question because the character name is not mentioned in the source material. You have to go a little.
Thank you for giving these ones to Matt.
Matt the hardest ones. Don't you worry about it.
Yeah, and I want to say like the second part is like Hannity or something, you know, like that's that, but I'm trying to reverse engineer that into some obscure Star Wars. I'm just going to take the hint, I guess.
Okay. Athelia McGrath and Zoe Deschanel.
Oh, okay. So way off on that.
So the senior librarian will condescendingly tell you that if it's not in the databanks, then it's not a true American.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not going to pull it.
All right. That was a tough one. That is, assuming nobody else knows it, that is Jocasta Nu, the old bag librarian who tells Obi-Wan, if it's not there, it's not there. In Revenge of the Sith and New Girl, where we see true America.
Oh, wow.
Had that half.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I was trying to think of the name of the droid in Solo that's the personality of the Millennium Falcon for some reason.
L3. Yeah.
Yeah.
She is not in this game. I'll give you that hint.
Okay.
All right. Back to Sarah D. Bundy. Culture shock ensues when the wealthy Newport Beach family brings a snooty protocol droid from the wrong side of the galaxy into their home.
I feel like it can't be this easy, but since it's free guest time, the OC-3PO?
That is just that easy, correct.
Hey.
Tara, it may be a trap if this Rebel Alliance commander shows up at your favorite struggling watering hole to fix it up before its inevitable closure.
Admiral Akbar Rescue.
Admiral Akbar Rescue is
gorgeous.
Correct.
Well done.
Thank you to the internet for reminding me of his name. I could picture him and then I couldn't get his face until I had Bar Rescue.
All right, this will take us soon to our score break. It is for Matt. The furry monsters of the forest moon rise from the dead. The survivors need to band together and keep moving. But what really separates us from them?
Ewalking's dead. Ewalking dead. Ewalking dead. Yeah,
it's
hard to say.
All right, we are a little over halfway done. Let's get the scores, please.
It's pretty close. Matt is out ahead. Mm-hmm. Sarah has 7 points. I have 8 points. Matt has 12 points.
All right, nicely
done.
That's
how you use your steel meals.
That's what they're there for. And when the season's done, they'll probably all get reset. So you might as well start using them.
I don't lose a point for calling it a snack pack or whatever.
We'll see. If there's a tie, that might not drop your way. Sarah D. Bunting, the former owner of the Millennium Falcon begins dating again in their 50s after the sudden death of his bike-riding husband. The former owner of the Millennium Falcon begins dating again in their 50s after the sudden death of his bike-riding husband.
sudden death of his bike riding husband. The word cloud is obscuring the answer. Could I have the hint, please?
Billy D. Williams and Sarah Jessica Parker.
Okay. Wait, that can't be right.
It's a little bit of a gotcha, but you'll get there. Billy D. Williams.
A particular kind of bike.
And Sarah Jessica Parker.
Yeah. Lando Calrissio, just like that.
You kind of screwed up the pronunciation, but you got the answer. Lando Calrissian, just like that is.
Oh god,
sort of how that mouth meal would work. Yes.
Okay, I skipped that.
That was tough. Yeah, I was like Calrissian, just like that. maybe I'm pronouncing his name wrong this whole time.
We get a little sweaty with some of the conjoining here, but we get there. Tara.
Yeah.
If you can understand the guttural roars that make up the dialogue, you'll enjoy this tight, meme-ready sketch comedy.
Want
the hint?
Yeah, I'll take the hint.
Peter Mayhew.
Yeah.
And Xmas Jackson Flaxen Waxen, California University of Pennsylvania.
Oh, no. I thought I had it. Now I'm further away.
Xmas Jackson Flaxen Waxen. California University.
Okay. Wookiee and Peele.
There we go.
There. Well done.
Oh, I see. I was going to say Chewbacca and Peele, but that doesn't make any sense.
All right, Matt. When she asks you to make sure the new translator speaks bocce, it's going to take charisma, uniqueness, nerve, and talent to make sure you don't fuck it up.
Aunt Beru Paul's Drag Race?
Yes. 2-point answer. Nicely done.
Jesus.
That is the kind of response I wanted after each of these. Sarah D. Bunting, mind powers don't work on the Tordarian host, but don't worry, he'll play all the hits you asked for anyways. Toydarian, name of the species there.
Yeah, that's not going to help me. Hint?
Your hint is a blue flying stereotype and Carson Daly.
A blue flying stereotype. Yeah. And
with
Carson
a big nose.
Daly.
Yeah. He likes money.
Yeah, I don't know that character's name. Sorry.
Anybody want to steal that?
We could work together and take half a point each. It's Max Rebo, but I don't know what
it's
this Carson
yours,
Daly thing is.
Really.
It is not. That is Watto.
Oh.
Request Live. Watto till
request live.
Oh, wow.
He plays all your requests.
That's why I couldn't figure it out.
Yeah. Wowie wow.
I have a request. Would you like to hear it?
Mind tricks don't work on me, only money.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
A Dark Lord of the Sith is pulled further into the shadows of the wealthy New York City Darling family when the family lawyer dies mysteriously. Once again.
I've got it. You don't need to say it again. Okay. Darth Vader, sexy money.
Darth Vader, sexy money. Yes, correct. 2 points.
The Darlings have been coming up a lot lately.
Yeah, they really have.
For a show that no one really liked and was only on for one season.
All right, Matt. I feel really good about at least one half of your chances here.
Here we go. Okay.
A blue keyboardist not only has a trunk, but also a lot of baggage from his fading fame as a star of Horsin' Around.
Max Rebo Jack Horseman.
Yes, Max Rebo Jack Horseman is correct. 2-point answer.
Is there one of these that was like the genesis for the game? Because I feel like that could have been that one.
I think it actually was Owen Calls the Heart. Yeah, that's how it started.
You're sick.
Sorry. Sarah.
It's true. Yes.
Being part of a group of space warrior monks make it a lot easier to survive your family's machinations and inherit an empire, particularly on a 70s BBC budget.
Empire. I am going to need a hint, I'm afraid.
All right, your hint is force-wielding wizards and Derek Jacobi.
This is a Dave fave that also comes up a lot.
No, I think I've got it, and I don't know whether to admire Dave or want to Punch him in the slats.
This is actually not mine. I believe this came from our past guest, Elon.
Oh.
But I'm not entirely sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, really? Yeah. Either way, we're going to fight after this. Is it Jedi Claudius?
Jedi I Claudius is the correct answer there. Tara.
Yeah.
A practical Jedi takes time off from training his Padawan Obi-Wan to brown-nose Hollywood talent via interviews and audience Q&As.
Qui-Gon Jiminy Glick?
No. Okay. There, here's your hint. Guess.
Okay, okay.
Liam Neeson.
Yeah.
And James Lipton.
Qui-Gon inside the actor studio.
You are correct. 1 point.
It's crazy. I thought of Jiminy Glick first also. It's like that. I just want to think of him as much as possible because I love
you
him.
You think that's unacceptable. Buckle down.
Oh,
here we
boy.
Go. Here's Matt.
Oh, no. Yeah. Okay.
The capital planet of the Galactic Empire is a home to many culinary delights. And our host is just the man to give you the kitchen confidential take on everything on the menu.
Oh, this is terrible.
It's Coruscant. What is that show called?
Two possible answers here, so I'll be lenient. There's two shows that share the start of the answer here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So once again, the capital planet of the Galactic Empire is home to many culinary delights, and her host is just the man to give you the kitchen confidential take on everything on the menu.
Yeah, it's Anthony Bourdain, but I cannot pull the name.
You had both parts.
Yeah,
I'll give you that. Give me what you got, so because the answer
Coruscant
is actually
Anthony Bourdain.
I'm going to give you that because we're going to talk about either No Reservations or the other one, which
parts
is
that's what I was trying to think.
Parts
of.
Unknown. So I'm going to give you that one for Anthony Bourdain. That is the meat of the answer there for sure.
You're very kind and lenient because I wasn't close to knowing the name of Arthur.
What was
show.
The planet? Alderaan?
Coruscant.
Oh, okay.
It's from the second.
The city planet. It's the big city. All right, Sarah, here's your question. A powerful, mopey force user betrays his family, his teacher, and everything they held dear due to space madness.
I would watch this, especially if it's animated. Kylo Ren and Stimpy?
Yes.
Kylo Ren and Stimpy. Nice.
All right. I'm not responsible for this one, but it is really good.
Great.
It is for Tara.
Okay.
This gritty remake finally gives us a microbiological explanation for this feisty Canadian heroine's red hair and precocious vocabulary.
Midichlorianne with an E.
You are correct. 2 points. That was your CanCon for the day.
You are correct. That was wrong.
All right, Matt.
Yeah.
The freighter may look like a piece of junk, but is home to a hardworking blue-collar American family just trying to make ends meet after the death of their matriarch.
The Millennium Falconers?
The Millennium Falconers. Millennium Falcon, the Conners.
That. Yeah.
All right, everybody's last question is coming at you. So, Tara, can I get a score update, please?
Well, it was close, and it's not anymore. Sarah has 11 points. I have 14 points. Matt... 20 points.
Okay. All right.
And a Dave point.
And a Dave point.
Mathematically, it is over, but, you know, let's just finish it up for shits and grins.
Let's do.
Sarah D. Bunting, last question. One of the galaxy's most wanted smugglers joins a group staging supernatural events in a Latin American city.
Staging supernatural events in a Latin American city.
Yes.
I'm going to give you a hint. It was my Around the Dial last week.
We've been talking about it recently. Yeah.
Okay. Nope, that doesn't help me. Could I have a hint, please?
All right, your hint is Harrison Ford and Julio Torres.
Oh, okay. I was thinking of the wrong guy. Han Solo's Spookies.
Yes, Han Solo's Spookies. Correct. Good for one. All right, Tara.
Yeah.
Everyone wants to race back to their home planet in time for their favorite holiday. But getting there moves time slowly, like sand in an hourglass.
Life days of our lives.
Life days of our lives. Life day,
terrible.
Days of our lives. Correct. Little holiday special content there for you. Last question of regulation is for Matt. The ragtag squad of rebels trying to steal the Death Star schematics encounter many complications. but none as challenging as the everyday struggles of being a single mom and veteran dealing with her wacky Cuban-American family and goofy landlord.
Oh, man. I love everything about this one. It's from start to finish. Great show. Great movie. Rogue Squadron Day at a Time.
Take that over again. Think about the movie.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, Rogue One Day at a
Time. There you go.
Got it.
Yes.
I was overcomplicating it because I was thinking of the actual squadron in question.
Yes, their call sign, Rogue One. All right. Tara, let's get the regulation scores, please.
He ran away with it. Sarah has 12 points. I had 16. Matt, our victor, with 22.
Holy cow. All right. Decisive victory.
Wow.
Before we make it official, let's just bang out this tiebreaker we no longer need. First person to answer it correctly will win a steel meal for future use. So as soon as somebody thinks they know the answer, you shout it out. Mm-hmm. Here we go.
Yep.
After killing a Jedi Master and being cut in half, a Sith Lord retires to a life of casual racism with his wife Edith, daughter Gloria, and son-in-law Meathead.
Darth Maul in the family?
Darth Maul in the family is correct. Tara gets that little stew meal, but today belongs to our value guest.
Valued guest.
Well done, Matt. Well done, everybody. That was a high-scoring game. All right, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We had sex and said shit in the galaxy far, far away before going around the dial with stops at 911. Never have I ever. Law and Order and
Money.
We discovered Dave will not hate the upcoming Nordic Nar spoof, Nopofo, this is what it's called. And we decided Friends, the one with the ball, was bad, but not quite no-nack bad. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Matt was the winner of this week's Game Time from at ESG Assist. Next up is joining the Navy on Extra Extra Hot Great and on ESG Prime Interview with the Vampire. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
it's not a cat,
Sarah D. Bunting.
When people live together, they split the cost of stamps?
And Matt Belknap.
I'm in too deep on Star Wars. I need to back off.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
Who are you? That's the wrong question. The right question is, how much time do we have to get out of here?